the location pastor here in Norton. And I was thinking about like dating and stuff like that, partly because of the series that we're in, but also because we just went through Valentine's Day. I hope you had a great Valentine's Day. But I remember the very first crush that I ever had was in third grade. It was kind of like that puppy love where you don't even know really what love is or anything. I just knew for the first time in my life, I thought somebody was cute. And I'm like, I don't know what to do with this feeling. So my grandmother used to be the one who'd pick me up from school every day. And so I told her about this girl that I thought was cute. I think her name was Stephanie. I don't really remember. But so I told my grandmother, and my grandmother had this like obsession with wanting me to be like this really romantic person as I grew up. And so she was like all about this. She wanted to help me out. She wanted to give me all the tools to woo this third grader. And so she was just like, well, we'll go to the store. Valentine's Day's coming up at this point. And so she brought me to a CVS and we picked out some Valentine's Day cards. I was a huge fan of Crocodile Hunter. Anybody Crocodile Hunter fan in here? So I was a huge fan of him. And so I found this card that said, Crocky, you're a beaut, right? And I was just like, that's brilliant. I'm not even going to win over this girl. I'm going to win over my whole class. They're going to be in love with me. And so I was super excited. I taped a bunch of candy to each little card, and then I gave them out to my class, and I signed my name on all of the cards. I was really excited. But for this girl's card, I wanted to get it off my chest that I liked somebody, but I didn't really want her to know that like I liked her. And so I signed all the cards, Stephen. But then on hers, I signed, from your secret admirer. Not a good idea. My third grade brain didn't really wrap around the idea that all she would have to do in order to figure out that I was the one who gave her this card was to look at her best friend who also had a Crocky, you're a beaut card that had my name signed on it and be like, who's the weirdo who's giving out this card, right? And so I was found out, and then my love was spurned. Sad day. I bring up that story because I think it tells us two things about love. First of all, love is powerful. It can make us do things that we otherwise never would, like buy Valentine's Day cards for an entire classroom of people when you only like one of them. But for some of you who've been in a relationship, you know, love can make you do some crazy things, just like Hercules said in that movie, that people do crazy things when they're in love. Like you might drive a long distance to go see somebody that you love, or you might write a long note, a love letter to somebody that you wouldn't do that for anybody else, but you love this person, so you're going to write that letter to them. Love is powerful. It makes us do all sorts of amazing things, but love also can be incredibly blind. That it's overwhelming, and because of that, it can take us out from making wise decisions. It could even make you maybe sign your name on a bunch of cards that then you give one card that says secret admirer and you didn't realize you'd be found out. Just as like a maybe situation. See, love is amazing, but it can also be blinding. And it's because of that that we wanted to enter into a conversation over the next few weeks called The Power of Love to help everybody figure out how to navigate this thing that we call love at whatever stage of life or relationship that you're in. And so last week we talked about the power of attraction. We dealt with three myths about attraction, that your identity, the core of your being, who you are completely, is based on who or what you're attracted to. When the reality is that who you are, your identity, is actually tied directly to who God says that you are. He is the creator. He knitted you. He knows you deeply, that you've been given God-given identity, and you've been given God-driven purpose in life. And the second thing we talked about was that your value is based on who loves you, that the more people who love you or the certain individuals that love you, that gives you value, when the truth is that God already declared your value by giving up his own life so that you would know how much he cares about you, so that you would know how much you are valuable to him. And the third myth that we talked about was this idea of love at first sight, that I think all of us kind of like the idea of that. Man, if I find that one person, everything will be made better. We'll just walk into the sunset and it'll be awesome. We'll never argue. We'll never fight. We'll never have any problems. We'll never have any debt. It'll be great. And those of you who are in a committed relationship, you go, and you'll never have that. Because love at first sight, it sounds great, but if it's just love at first sight, then that's really superficial. And so this morning, what I want to talk about is not attraction, but pursuit. And pursuit is simply prioritizing someone or something in your life. And I want to clarify, because I think whenever we talk about relationships or we're in a relationship series at church, we kind of have this internal language where we're talking about being in a committed relationship, and we talk about it almost as if everyone should be in a relationship. That is the goal in life, that you need to be in a relationship. And I just want to make sure you know that it's okay if you're not. That we teach this as if it's this implied thing that dating is better than singleness, engaged is better than dating, and married is better than engagement. When what if, biblically, like you don't have to be married in order to be whole. It's really quiet in the room. Let's go to Bible and we'll take a look. 1 Corinthians 7 says this, "But I wish everyone were single, just as I am." And I know there's some married couples in the room who now you just grab the hand of your spouse, you're just like, "I don't like this verse." And there's some married couples in the room who you're just thinking, "I'm going to put this verse in our fridge. Like, I love this verse." We'll get to you later. But it says, "Yet each person has a special gift from God of one kind or another. So I say to those who aren't married and to widows, it's better to stay unmarried just as I am. But if they can't control themselves, they should go and marry. It's better to marry than to burn with lust." See, I think we need to do a better job of celebrating singleness. That if you're single in the room, I want you to know that your singleness, it's not a sin, it's not a problem, it's not wrong. That there's actually tangible benefits to being single. Just so you know, I'm happily married. Like, this isn't, like, I feel like as I'm saying this, there's so many benefits to singleness. I'm just kidding. But there's a lot of benefits to singleness. And if you're single in the room, you can take advantage of life opportunities that married people, especially married people with kids, can't. But if you're married, whether you have kids or not, you have opportunities, or maybe you can relate to some people that people who are single can't relate to as well, that there's actually benefits in both. But it's not that you're incomplete until you find somebody. Paul was single. Was he incomplete? No. Jesus was single. Was he incomplete? No. See, I think actually the goal in life and God's desire for your life isn't that you would spend your entire life pursuing someone. It's actually that you would pursue something. Actually, 1 Peter 1 says this, "But now you must be holy." Not single, not married, holy. "In everything you do, just as God who chose you is holy." Not single, not married. He's not saying your life objective is to chase after someone. He says, no, the purpose of your life, God's desire for you, isn't that you'd be single or that you'd be married. It's that you'd be holy, and you can do that at whatever stage of life that you're at. "For scriptures say you must be holy because I am holy." You see, God's biggest concern for your life isn't your relationship status. It's your relational standing with him. It's your holiness. What is holiness? It's simply cleanliness, cleanness before God, having a clean heart in front of God. And you can be holy single, and you can be holy married. And if you're still on the fence about like whether or not you could actually honor God even while being single, well, the rest of this chapter, what Paul writes, most of his correction and teaching is actually aimed at married people, not single people. He continues in verse 10, and he says, "But for those who are married, I have a command that comes not from me, but from the Lord. A wife must not leave her husband. And if she does leave him, let her remain single or else be reconciled to him. And husbands must not leave his wife." And I think Paul probably wrote this verse in response to saying, like, I wish everybody was single, just to like say to everybody, no, if you are married, don't use me as the scapegoat. Well, Paul said we need to. No, that like he's just like, no, stay together. But what's he saying? What Paul is saying is that God doesn't want to see relationships broken, just like you don't. That God is actually honored by commitment. He's honored by people pursuing each other. He's honored by people choosing unity, even in the face of adversity. That actually reconciliation is something that God delights in because it's true to his very character. Paul continues, verse 12. "Now I will speak to the rest of you though I do not have a direct command from the Lord. And I think this is actually the only place in Scripture where Paul says this, that I don't have a direct command from God, but I'm going to give you some wisdom here. Like, that doesn't mean ignore what he's saying, because he's saying, like, I don't have a direct command from the Lord. This is still the same guy who is writing all throughout the New Testament different pieces of wisdom that people would follow today. So he's still somebody that I would go, even if you're just giving me an off-the-cuff piece of wisdom, like, I'm still going to listen to you, right? And so he says, if a fellow believer has a wife who's not a believer and she's willing to continue living with him, he must not leave her. And if a believing woman has a husband who's not a believer, and he's willing to continue living with her, she must not leave him. For the believing wife brings holiness into her marriage, and the believing husband brings holiness to his marriage. Otherwise, your children would not be holy, but now they are holy. So he says, for the sake of even your kids, for the sake of your marriage, if you're a follower of Jesus in the room and your spouse doesn't believe in God, don't make the reason why things aren't working you. Don't allow you to be the reason this didn't work out, or you're the reason why you broke up or anything like that. Like, don't allow that to be the case. If you're a follower of Jesus, don't you realize that you're the one who's bringing that cleanness before God, the desire to honor God with your marriage into your marriage? But if the husband or wife who isn't a believer insists on leaving, let them go. In such cases, the believing husband or wife is no longer bound to the other, for God has called you to live in peace. But then he says this, and I think this is crazy. Don't you wives realize that your husbands might be saved because of you? Don't you husbands realize that your wives might be saved because of you? What's Paul talking about? In the end, what Paul is simply saying is, in relationships, we need to stop aiming at convenience. We need to stop aiming just at our own personal happiness. We need to stop aiming at just an easy relationship, and we need to start aiming at holiness. We have to start aiming at asking the question, or answering the question, what about my relationship, or what in my relationship, or how can my relationship create the biggest kingdom impact to the people around me, but specifically to the person that I'm in a relationship with? See, God has a plan, but that plan ultimately is for your holiness, not just your happiness. And as you navigate different stages of life, I want you to know that whether you're single, if you're dating, if you're engaged, if you're married in the room, you can actually pursue holiness at whatever stage of relationship or life that you're in. And so what I want to do for us this morning is simply point out three attributes that are consistent in a pursuit of holiness or godliness. And the first one is that a godly pursuit has biblical boundaries. See, I think we tend to think of boundaries as hindrances to get what we're actually looking for, but that's not a boundary, that's adversity. A boundary is something that actually helps you establish your priorities. Like, if pursuit is actually prioritizing someone or something in your life, then a boundary helps you establish those, and it also helps you keep those priorities. Like, a boundary isn't something that keeps you back from achieving things, it actually allows you to experience the things that you're trying to aim at. Like, a boundary in life would be like the rumble strip on a highway. I would way rather hear that sound that we all hate. Nobody likes running over the rumble strip, right? No one? Like, you're the most annoying driver on the planet if that's the case. Like, I don't want to do a road trip with you. But, like, nobody likes hitting the rumble strip, but I'd way rather hit the rumble strip than end up in the ditch. But the rumble strip isn't stopping you from enjoying the rest of the road. Actually, leaning into the rumble strip and saying, this is going to be my boundary, helps me enjoy the entirety of the road. I don't want to be stuck between the rumble strip and the ditch, but actually choosing to adhere to that boundary helps me experience freedom. And in that same way, biblical boundaries do the same thing in our life. They allow us to experience and enjoy the rest of the road in life. In Genesis chapter 2, we actually see God's heart when it comes to boundaries. Genesis 2, verse 9, the Lord made all sorts of trees grow up from the ground. This is after God's created everything, and he's establishing order, and then he's speaking to the man and the woman, telling them about this creation. It says, trees that were planted, and they were beautiful, and they produced delicious fruit. In the middle of the garden, he planted the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So God planted all these trees in the garden, tons of them. I don't know if there was any borders in the Garden of Eden. We hear about like three or four rivers that are in there, but it doesn't say that the garden didn't continue past there. Like, I don't know if there was any borders. I don't know if there was any fences or any boundaries there at all. But it says that God created all of these trees. And then if you jump down to verse 15, it says the Lord placed the man in the Garden of Eden to tend and watch over it. How much of it? All of it. But the Lord warned him, "You may eat freely from every tree in the garden." Every tree. Like, I always forget that this verse is there because I think we always lump on to the next one where God says, "Accept the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. If you eat its fruit, you are sure to die." But God said, "You can eat from any tree. I'm just asking you not to eat from this one because this one will have consequences behind it. This is the ditch. The rest is the road before the rumble strip." See, boundaries don't limit our freedom. Boundaries help us create boundaries between us and the things that actually do limit our freedom. That God's desire is that we would install biblical boundaries in our life so that we can enjoy the entire road, we can enjoy the entire garden, we can enjoy all that God desires us to enjoy in our lives and not be hindered, not be trapped by the things that could actually steal our freedom. So what about boundaries in a relationship? Well, if you're dating, Paul wrote two letters to this guy named Timothy. Timothy was a young, single pastor, and so Paul wrote him these two letters as pieces of instruction to him. And 1 Timothy chapter 5, he writes to Timothy, talking to him about how to relate to different people, like all sorts of different people that he would encounter in his life. And so he starts off in verse 1, and he says, "Never speak harshly to an older man, but appeal to him respectfully as you would your own father." And how many of us would say, that's pretty good wisdom, right? Like, if you were to speak to an older man with respect, as if they were your own father, you're going to have a pretty good relationship with that person. Like, every guy just wants to be heard. And every guy just wants to have a little bit of respect. And so if you speak to an older man that way, like, that's good wisdom. Can I get a little nod or something? Because I'm going somewhere with this. I need to know if you agree with what he's saying. Okay. Second one. He says, talk to younger men as you would your own brothers. If I were to talk to a younger guy as my brother, like, I'm going to wrap my arm around him, I'm going to joke with him, give him a hard time, but also make sure that that guy knows that I love him. Because his desire is just to know that I belong, I'm part of the conversation, I'm in, I'm loved. Like, that's going to go well if you talk to somebody your age or somebody younger like they're your brother, right? Like, that's going to go well. Give me a little nod, something. I'm going somewhere, I promise. Treat older women as you would your mother. How do you talk to your mom? Kindly, respectfully. You're going to ask her about her day. You're going to give her a big hug when you see her. You're going to make sure that she knows that you care about her day because she just wants to be listened to. She just wants to be seen, acknowledged. So do that. That's going to go well for you, right? Give me a little nod. I'm going somewhere, I promise. Okay. Here's the tough one. He says, and treat younger women. Timothy was a young pastor, so Paul's not saying younger women like kids. He's saying younger women like women your age, because Paul was older than Timothy. So treat women like your age with all purity as you would your own sisters. I'm about to be every single guy's least favorite person in the room. Probably every single person's least favorite person in the room. There are two phrases that Paul uses right here that should affect how you relate to other people that you might be pursuing relationally in life. He says, treat them with all purity. He doesn't say that for any of the other people. He doesn't say, treat older women like your mom with all purity. Like, that would sound weird, right? He doesn't say, treat them like your father with all purity. Nope. He just goes, treat younger women with all purity as you would your own sister. So when it comes to boundaries in your relationship, the primary way that other people that you're not married to, before you get married to somebody, the primary way that you relate to them or are identified with other followers of Jesus in life is that you are brothers and sisters in Christ. That changes when you're married. So, boundaries, dating boundaries. Can you hold hands with your sister? it's okay. Everybody's like, no, I would never. Can you hold hands with your sister? Yeah. Can you hug your sister? Can you kiss your sister? Kind of mixed right there. It's okay. I'd lean towards like safety on that one. On the cheek, yeah. Can you make out on a couch, laying down in the dark in a basement, saying that you're watching Netflix, but no, you're not, with your sister? Thank you. I'm so glad we're unified as a church on that. Because if anybody's even on the fence, that's where what Paul says right there. He goes, with all purity, like just in case you weren't sure, with all purity, no. The answer is no. And if you're thinking right now, Steve, you just made that so weird. No, you made it weird by wanting to kiss your sister. And even if you want to throw that completely out, here's all I'm happy with. The next time you're in that situation, my voice is going to be in your head. Crap, it's my sister. No. So what about marriage boundaries? Well, the Bible also has boundaries. It has guardrails for marriage. It says in Ephesians 5, starting verse 24, as a church submits to Christ, so you wives should submit to your husbands in everything. And that word submit culturally has some weird undertones to it. It's really close to respect or honor. For husbands, this means love your wives, just as Christ loved the church. He gave up his own life for her, to make her holy and clean, washed by the cleansing of God's word. He did this to present her to himself as a glorious church without spot or wrinkle or any other blemish. Instead, she will be holy and without fault. In the same way, husbands ought to love their wives as they love their own bodies. For a man who loves his wife actually shows love for himself. Even if you've never been to church before, you probably get the idea that the biblical idea of marriage, you've probably heard it before, is between a man and a woman. And I'm not trying to start a fight, I'm not trying to start an argument, but what I want you to see here is simply that that's not an arbitrary guardrail or boundary or rule that God just set up to ruin anybody's life or experience. That it actually serves a purpose. And that purpose is that the marriage between a man and a woman symbolizes Jesus' relationship with the church. That a man isn't just called to love his wife or just be a part of a marriage, but he's actually called to sacrificially love his wife, to actually care for her. And a woman, a wife, is actually called to honor her husband the same way that the church submits to Jesus, in the same way that Jesus leads the church and loves the church sacrificially. A man is supposed to do that. And so whenever we do anything that's outside of those, it actually breaks that picture that God is trying to paint of his relationship with us. And so when a man walks out on his wife, it would be like Jesus abandoning us. When a wife walks out on her husband, she pursues another man. That's like the church saying, I'm going to find my own solution. I don't need you anymore. But when a man walks out on his wife or just pursues another man, then that's a picture of Jesus only being concerned for himself. And when a woman marries a woman or pursues another woman, it's a picture of the church saying, I'm going to rescue myself. I don't need Jesus. It's not an arbitrary picture. I want you to know, like, I'm not saying this with anger. I'm not saying this with anything like that. But what I am saying is that the picture of a man and a woman in a marriage relationship, the idea behind that is to paint the picture of Jesus's relationship with us. And whenever we color outside of those lines, we're blurring that picture. We're making it harder to see. And we're outside of the picture that God desires to paint. Not in an angry way. Once again, like, I hope you see, like, I'm not mad. I'm red because I always look sunburned, not because I'm mad. That God's desire for marriage is the same as any other area of life, holiness. And so he just simply asked that we would adhere to his standards, to his boundaries. when we go outside of that, it's kind of like the first time, actually the only time, I got an Xbox 360. This was years ago, because I know there's been like two Xboxes since then. But I got an Xbox 360 when I was in high school, and I was so excited, but I was also really frustrated because the boxes on those things, if you've ever tried to unbox like a game system, it's so hard to get it out of the box. Like, it's super difficult. They have all these tabs, they have all this tape, and so I just got frustrated. So I took a knife. This is going bad. I took a knife. And so I took a knife, and rather than going on a seam or anything, I was just like so mad. So I just stabbed into the box and I cut. And it didn't ruin the whole system, but I had a slice across the front of it, just all along the front. And so this huge panel, like, you could see this clear line across. Why? Well, because I ignored the instructions. I ignored the boundaries. I ignored the guardrails. I ignored wisdom that there is a certain way to open this. In that same way, God has given us this beautiful gift of life. He's given us this beautiful gift of relationship. He's given us this beautiful gift of marriage. I think sometimes in our desire to get what we want out of what God has given us, we try to cut our own way through, and in the process we do damage. And God's desire for these boundaries, his desire for these guardrails, isn't to limit your freedom. It's so that you could enjoy the whole road. So you'd enjoy the whole garden. You could enjoy the entirety of what God desires for you, because it is good. The second aspect of a holy pursuit is that a godly pursuit has shared values. Amos 3:3 says, "Can two people walk together without agreeing on the direction?" And the answer is no. Like, if you're going to walk a lifetime with somebody, then you probably want to figure out where they're walking, because a lifetime is a long time to walk towards something that you don't want to go towards. And that's why it's so important to actually have some shared values between you and your spouse. Shared values on things like your worldview, or if traveling's really important to you and they never want to leave the house, like, that's going to be really difficult. Or politics, or especially faith. People argue about the smallest things, let alone whether or not there's a God who's real, who really wants to talk to you every day. Like, that's a big paradigm shift. That's the big difference. And so you want to be on some level of agreement on these things. And that doesn't mean that you need to agree on everything. It doesn't mean you need to be the same person. Because if you are the same person, one of you is unnecessary. So you need to agree at least on some core values. And this isn't about one outlook or one perspective is better than the other, and so they're less than. No, that's not it at all. It's just the simple idea that if you're a hardcore Democrat and you marry a hardcore conservative, you're probably going to have to live with some headaches. Same thing on the other way. I'm not sure if I would have gotten more of a response if I did the other way. Probably some of you are like, Democrats? Where? If you're a vegan and you're pursuing a carnivore deer hunter, that's gonna be pretty difficult, right? Like, if all they eat is meat, you put something green on there and they're like, you better put a food dye in my eggs or something, my ham. Like, otherwise I'm not eating this. That's gonna be difficult. If you're a follower of Jesus and you take your faith really seriously, it might be difficult to live your entire life with somebody who's not that serious about their faith or doesn't believe in God at all. This affects every level of relationship too. Because genuinely, you are going to date somebody that you pursue, you're going to get engaged to somebody you date, and then you're going to marry somebody you're engaged to. So then why would you date somebody that you don't think you'd ever see yourself marrying? This should affect every area of that level relationship. 1 Corinthians 7, Paul continues and he says in verse 35, "I'm saying this for your benefit, not to place restrictions on you." Basically, I'm not telling you who to date or what to do to just limit your dating pool, but I'm saying this for a reason. I want you to do whatever will help you serve the Lord best, with as few distractions as possible. The reason why this is so important is because if you end up choosing to marry somebody who doesn't share the same core values, like, what's at your core, what really matters to you, then either that person you value will take you away from the things that you value, or the things you value will take you away from the person that you value. There's always going to be that tension. And the third aspect of a godly pursuit is that a godly pursuit has healthy rhythms. And I think this might be the missing part for a lot of couples, that you can have biblical boundaries and you could have shared values, but you still might have a seemingly stale relationship. Like you feel like, man, I feel like we're checking all the boxes, but I'm not sure what's off in our relationship. This is the one that would take a good marriage to great. This is the one that actually helps you establish a rhythm in life so that you are in sync. I saw this stat that I thought was amazing about healthy rhythms. And it said that 1 in 2 marriages end in divorce. That's 50%. But then it had this other number that I thought was insane. 1 in 1,152 marriages end in divorce where the couple prays together daily. So that doesn't just go from 50% to 1%. That goes from 50% to less than 0.1%. That's insane. Or that's God. See, I don't think it's just about throwing up a quick prayer together as a married couple. I don't. I actually think it's about establishing a healthy rhythm together of saying that we're going to pursue each other spiritually, that we're going to establish a daily routine, a daily habit of checking in with each other, of having some sort of rhythm. And that rhythm doesn't always have to look exactly the same, but this actually can help you continue to have some sort of check-in, some sort of way to see each other clearer and to actually make sure that each other is continuing to be healthy. And so whether it's a daily prayer together, or maybe it's that you bookend times of stress with times of rest. Like, there is no such thing really as balance in life. Like, there's never just like, oh, things were really crazy for like 9 to 5, and everything calms down as soon as I go home with all the kids. That just doesn't happen, right? But what you need to start doing is actually frame those times of high stress with some rest. Take a vacation together, whether you bring the kids or not, or have a weekend away. Frame those moments so that you have a healthy rhythm in life. Maybe it's every few months you do a weekend away together, or every week you just have this one night is our date night so that we have some sort of rhythm to check in with each other. That way we are aware of each other's needs and we see each other clearly. If you're wondering how can I establish those, I got three questions to help you establish some sort of rhythms in your life. First one's, when are we going to pray together? When was the last time you took time to pray with your spouse? Their faith is their own, but the way God looks at you, you are one. And so maybe it's time to start working as one. Second question is, what will we do to grow spiritually together? Like, we take time to go on dates. We take time to have conversations. We take time to play board games together. We take time to grow our kids. But what if we actually took time to grow each other spiritually? Number three is, how are we going to recharge together? Like, my wife and I rest differently. We just do. I like reading a lot of books. She likes When Calls the Heart. We rest differently. But what we found is the times where we feel closest is when we rest together, when we take time away to recharge as a couple, and we have those opportunities to really check in with each other. No one has a perfect marriage. Nobody has a perfect relationship. But that's not the point. The point is, I believe every single one of us, whether you're extremely happy with your marriage or you feel like there's been tension for years, or you're in the middle of kind of exploring marriage, or you're just single and you're like, man, maybe someday, I don't know. I think we could all get better. If you're single in the room, this is the best piece of marriage advice I can give you. Be the type of person that you're looking for. If you want to find somebody responsible, a responsible person is probably looking for someone who's responsible. If you want to find someone who's kind and patient, then maybe you need to start being kind and patient, and you might find that that type of person is looking for somebody who's also kind and patient. Be the type of person that you're looking for. But find a healthy rhythm to start creating those characteristics within yourself. And if you're married, find a healthy rhythm to start checking in with your spouse and grow together spiritually. I'm going to bow your heads, close your eyes. Father, I thank you for who you are. I thank you for the reality that although we've been talking about pursuing holiness and how to have a healthy pursuit when we're married or when we're dating or we're engaged, whatever stage of life, or we're single, I just thank you for the fact that you pursued us. That we can love because you first loved us. That you didn't abandon us, you didn't forsake us, you didn't leave us. You didn't leave us in our sin, but you actually came as a human so that we could see a life, what type of life that somebody could live if they lived their entire life in connection with you. You lived as an example here on earth of what it really means to love, what it really means to live, what it really means to live out biblical boundaries, shared value with God, and have healthy rhythms in life. I ask that you would give us the courage, you'd give us the conviction, you'd give us the commitment to actually say that biblical boundaries matter in my life. They matter in my relationships. I ask that you'd give us the boldness to say, I'm not going to compromise, and there's certain things that are valuable enough to me that I need to share those with the person that I'm going to spend the rest of my life with. And I ask that you would give us the resolve to establish healthy rhythms in life. That I don't want my marriage to be the only thing that's unscheduled or that's kind of ad-libbed in my life. We schedule everything in our lives, but I ask that you would give us the resolve to actually schedule time for our spouses. Schedule time to grow closer to you. Schedule time, if we're single, to ourselves to actually dig up some things within us that might need to be changed or might need to be looked at. If you're in the room and you're thinking, I don't even know where to start with those values. I don't really know where to start with the biblical boundaries. I just don't really know where to start at all. Well, I'd say the first place you need to start is with Jesus. That if you don't know Jesus, you're in the room and you heard his name a couple times, but you came to church because you're curious about him. Here's what I want you to know. That Jesus lived a perfect life. As an example to us of what it would look like if somebody lived a sinless life. What is sin? It's disobedience to you and selfishness towards other people. Disobedience to God and selfishness towards other people. We're all guilty of it, me included. But then he died on a cross for our sins, unjustly. But then he rose from the dead, conquering the power of that sin so that our lives don't have to be narrated by sin and death or our addictions or our past unhealthy rhythms. That our lives can actually be narrated by the amazing story of what Jesus is doing in them. So if you want to start a relationship with that Jesus, I simply want you to pray this. Jesus, I'm all in. I'm all in. No marriage is perfect. We can all get better. No relationship is perfect. We can all get better. No person's perfect. We could all get better. But I ask that if you're in this room and you know Jesus, you'd commit to establishing some healthy boundaries, some biblical boundaries in your relationships, that you would talk about some values that you're not going to budge on. As a family, find out what really matters most to you as a married couple. How cool would that be? If you find that giving, or if you find that sharing with other people, or if you found that caring for people who are less fortunate than you really just stirred both of you as a couple, how powerful would that be for your neighborhood? God, I thank you once again for who you are. Amen.